continuing our series on the awesome responsibility that God has given to us, the awesome responsibility of raising our children and of parenting. And I'd like to read Ephesians chapter 6, just these first four verses. Children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. Honor your father and your mother. This is the first commandment with promise, that it may be well with you, that you may live long on the earth. And you fathers, do not provoke your children to wrath, but bring them up in the training and admonition of the Lord. I want to start our time this afternoon by considering what our culture says about authority. And maybe I should ask those who grew up in the 60s to give a few words about what our culture says about authority. Is mostly that of casting off authority and rebelling against it and not wanting to have anything to do. Authority is a four-letter word for our culture, it seems like. In other words, people don't like authority. Not only do they not like being under authority, but in an interesting way, I think that our culture doesn't even like even exercising authority. We somehow think that everyone should just naturally get along, which usually means that everyone should naturally do what I say and want to do that, and I won't have to exert any authority to get that to come about. Does that sound familiar? Well, that may be an oversimplification, but I think that if you look at our culture and our society, one critique or one evaluation of American culture is that we have issues with authority. We have issues with either people who have authority or people who do not want to have authority. The Bible speaks of many different types of authority. It speaks about civil governments very clearly. It talks about God giving the sword to civil government to exercise its authority. It talks about church leaders and the authority that God has given to the elders of a church to serve Christ among the people of God. And it speaks about parents as being given responsibility to rule in their families. Now, having introduced it in this way, you may be able to answer fairly quickly my next question. Where does this authority come from? Does the authority of the parents come from the fact that they are bigger than you children? Poor Linda Wilkinson. Poor Melody Spiller. Any number of the ladies of the congregation will say, no, that's not where the authority comes from. As our children grow, they sometimes become bigger than their parents. So does it come from strength then, or does it come from intelligence, or any other thing like that? Well, no. The basis for parental authority doesn't come from anything external like that. It doesn't come from size or speed or strength or intelligence. The authority that parents exercise in the household comes because God has given that to parents. God has given parents the authority to rule in their household. I quoted from Genesis chapter 18 this morning to see how Jacob was leading his children and how Jacob exercised an authority in his household, calling on them to purify themselves and to put away their idols. And I quoted back in Genesis chapter 18 what God said about Abraham and the covenant that he made with him. In Genesis chapter 18, verse 19, God says, For I have known him in order that he may command his children and his household after him, that they may keep the way of the Lord, to do righteousness and justice, that the Lord may bring to Abraham what he has spoken to him. God, in covenanting with Abraham, acknowledged his giving to Abraham an authority then to teach and to train his family after him. I read from Deuteronomy chapter 6 earlier. Deuteronomy mentions fathers, sons, and grandsons, and this is not, don't misconstrue that to neglect the women in any way, but to see that as the head of the household and the husband and the instruction of the whole household. And God in Deuteronomy 6 shows his design of the remembering that Moses was setting in front of the Israelites as they were about to go into the promised land. He goes on to warn them, be careful lest you forget what God has done. You're going to go in, you're going to claim cities that you didn't build, you're going to eat from vineyards that you did not plant, you're going to drink from wells that you did not dig. At that point, be careful that you don't forget the Lord and say, it's by my power and my strength this has come about. That's what the passage goes on, but right at the first, God said, listen to me, this is the way that you will do it. Parents, instruct your children. Teach them as they sit down and as they rise up. Train them as they go out and as they come in. Now, a little bit later, we'll go on to consider some of the, in coming weeks, we'll consider some of the implications of those verses. But I want you to see implied in that is the understanding that God has given to the parents the authority to teach and to train their children. I do this just to demonstrate and to confirm what I hope that you all believe in, that there is an authority for parents to train their children. Then I read from Ephesians chapter 6, verse 4. In this passage, Paul said to bring up children in the way of the Lord, in the fear and the admonition of the Lord, to train and to teach in this way. Again, see that as confirmation of the authority that God has given to parents. There are some important applications for that and very fundamental ways that I want you to apply this teaching to your own lives and to your own families. And the first is to instruct the parents to see yourselves as ones being under authority. To see yourselves as being ones under authority. By that I mean that your authority is a God-given responsibility and a God-given authority. And you yourselves fall under the authority of Jesus Christ. And in other spheres of influence, you are under authority even in a congregation. And you have a relationship maybe at work where you are under authority. But most importantly, I want you to see that you are functioning under the call of God, and that his call to train your children is one that then instructs you in that training. That means, for one thing, that the training of your children is not an option. If you are under authority and you've received this call, then the call is very clear. You are not just invited, or you're not just given the opportunity to train your children because you have some, but you are expressly commanded to train your children in this way. Seeing yourself as under authority will help you to see that is an authority that comes from God and the command that God gives for that. I say that just to confront a tendency which is unfortunately too popular today, the tendency of becoming your child's best friend or advisor. And maybe you've read or heard of parenting styles that that urge you to see parents and children. This is going to come out wrong. I should have thought through. See parents as children as friends, as if you should not be friends. I said that came out weird because, yes, parents and children should love each other and should be intimately close and enjoy, be friendly towards each other. But what I'm trying to confront and what I'm trying to say is that if that is where the relationship stops, then you're not a parent. You are just a friend. And there is, and friends stand on a common ground and on a level playing field. And the parenting movement that says that parents and children should be advisors or friends says that parents would give options to their children or might give them counsel, but never give correction or discipline or leadership. And as a book, Ted Tripp suggests how a day like this might go. In the morning, parents might come in and say, it's 8 o'clock. I have breakfast if you would like it, and if you would choose to come to the table, I'd be happy to serve you. And when the child finally makes it to the table, the parents say, and what would you like to have this morning? I cooked oatmeal, but I'd be happy to make anything else. maybe it might even go as far as a menu. And you could follow through the rest of the day and see how a parent that sees themselves only as a friend or an advisor would set before their children certain options, certain choices, and allow the child to make all of their decisions for themselves. Now, what individuals will sometimes say about that is that, well, we need to let our children learn to make decisions for themselves. And I agree with that. That is very important, that our children need a safe environment to learn how to make decisions and to learn what is valuable and true and to decide in good and proper ways. But even more fundamental than that, our children do need to learn what it means to be under authority. They need to learn what it means to obey their parents. I've spent the first part of my sermon then demonstrating the necessity of authority within the household and demonstrating that it is a biblical principle that God has given to us that there is such a thing as parental authority. I'd like to couple with that authority just a brief look at how important law is with authority. Think back out to broader issues of authority and of government, and I mentioned national governments or the governments of people, the governments of church, and then the governments of family. Imagine, if you would, a country without any laws, a country without any authorities. It would look something like Iraq. It would look something like some of the chaos that we've seen when there is no authority. Or to take a lesser example, imagine trying to play a game of basketball that has no rules. Now, Calvin and Hobbes would play games without any rules all the time, and Calvin would say, you're out. And Hobbes would say, no, I'm not. this is the second Thursday after Thanksgiving, so I'm not out. And they, just on the fly, they would make up all the rules on their own. And a game like that would be totally chaotic. Well, every range of authority, every range of government has coupled with it the rules, or coupled with it the laws that go along with that. And so it's very important for us to see that in the training of our children, that there is the important aspect of teaching our children the laws. And I asked before, where does the authority of parents come from? I'll ask the same now. Where do the laws come from? Well, just as surely as the authority of parents came from God, so do our laws. So do the rules and the guidelines for our parenting. They don't come from the one who is bigger or stronger or smarter because they can or will or think it's the best thing to do. Our parenting rests securely upon God's law. So part of discipline and part of training our children is honestly a discipleship. We usually think of that term in the range of teaching and training our children in godliness and of the things of the Lord. And I hope that you will see discipline and discipleship as being woven together, that they are so intimately connected that you would never want to separate them. Because part of your authority and part of the instruction that parents are given is that of to correct your children, to discipline them. And fundamental to that discipline is that they understand what it is that they are being disciplined for. So there's discipleship that is undergirding that parental authority. There is the teaching and training of our children in the law of God, that we would train them, as Paul says in Ephesians 6, in the fear and admonition of the Lord. Proverbs is a great passage which instructs us in this. And Proverbs 22, verse 6 says, train up a child in the way he should go, and when he is old, he will not depart from it. And you can see part of the promise of training your children in this way, training them to fear the Lord and to follow after him. So as we teach our children the law, part of that will very naturally be that we also teach our children of the lawgiver. And here's the discipleship elements coming back into play. That as we train them, we'll naturally lead them to understand not only the rules, but the rule giver. Not only the law, but the lawgiver. Now, this has a very practical aspect to it as well. That means that you need to communicate clearly what the rules are. Communicate clearly what the law is, and what is expected of them as children, and what is acceptable and what is not. If the rules aren't spoken, or if they're not thought through, you'll end up being like Calvin and Hobbes. Why am I spanking you? Well, it's the third Thursday after Thanksgiving, and so you cross the line once too often, and I'm just tired and I'm frustrated. And we'll come later to thinking about the use of the rod, but I want you to see here at this point that the importance of the law or importance of the rules needs to be communicated. Otherwise, the application of discipline will become an arbitrary fashion, or will become arbitrary in its implementation. We have the blessing of knowing that our Father in heaven has made his law plain. And by example, we have a good example that we too should make the rules plain. The next very practical application of this understanding is not only do we need to know the law, but we also need to enforce the law. As I said, we'll look in a later week about the subject of the use of the rod or the spanking. But I want you to hear some other verses from Proverbs that describe the process of discipline and even its goal. This is Proverbs chapter 3, verses 11 and 12. My son, do not despise the chastening of the Lord, nor detest his correction. For whom the Lord loves, he corrects, just as a father the son in whom he delights. In discipline, or in chastening in this passage or this version, the discipline has a goal of correction and a goal of the expression of love, not of an expression of anger or frustration. This is Proverbs chapter 19, verse 18. Chasten your son while there is hope, and do not set your heart on his destruction. Chastening has as a goal a correction here again, a correction that brings hope. And to leave off discipline or to leave off the enforcement of the rules is to set your heart on your children's destruction. That's shown as well in Proverbs 13, verse 24. Proverbs 13, 24. He who spares his rod hates his son, but he who loves him disciplines him promptly. And then finally in chapter 23, verses 13 and 14. Do not withhold correction from a child, for if you beat him with a rod, he will not die. You shall beat him with a rod and deliver his soul from hell. The wisdom literature is given to us for very practical reasons, and the training of our children is a very practical aspect of our Christian life. And it has that goal of the driving away, the rebuking of sin, and even the delivering of their soul from death. Now we'll look at a later date at the use of the rod, but I do want you to see that the enforcement of the parental authority of God's law flows from an understanding that you are called to exercise authority in your home. That this is something that is good and right. And you don't need to wonder about that authority that God has given to you. I've spoken mostly to the parents this afternoon. Let me shift gears a little bit and talk very directly to you as children. Because I want you to hear what God said very clearly, children, obey your parents. Children, obey your parents. Don't despise the correction that your parents bring to you. In Scripture, it's the fool that despises correction. It's the fool that won't listen to the wisdom that is brought to him from those in authority over them. It's the fool that does what he wants. And guess what? It's the fool that comes to a terrible end. Now, at this stage in your life, may feel like you would never ever want to question your parents, never ever want to think that they are anything other than the loving parents that God has given to you. I pray that is the way it is throughout your entire life. But let me warn you that temptations will come. The temptations do come, especially as you grow and mature and you become more and more responsible as God has designed you to be. That one of the temptations that Satan loves to bring against or bring to young people is that as they are practicing more and more of that responsibility, the temptation is to then rebel against the authority of their parents, to rebel against the authority that God has given given over them. Paul says, children, obey your parents, for this is right. For this is right. That's one good reason. One good reason for obeying that parental authority is that this is what God has given to you. This is part of your responsibility in a Christian home to see your parents as the one God has given to you for your leadership and to obey them. This is right. Paul also says that this is the first commandment that's given with promise, that it may be well with you in the land which you're going in to possess. And there is rich reward in the obedience of parents. Part of it is just very practical. Your parents have walked in the same path that you were walking, and they may have made the same decisions that you're contemplating, and may have seen the foolish end of where something might lead. And so part of it is just very practical. They can tell you, because of their years and because of their experience, don't go there. You'll only be hurt. But this is a promise of God as well. This is a promise of God to pour out His blessing, His delight on this type of behavior. He gave it to the children of Israel as they were anticipating going into the promised land. He gave it to them on Mount Sinai in the Ten Commandments. And that means, and then again in Deuteronomy as they are just poised on going in, along with the warning not to forget. And then instructs parents to train their children and children to obey their parents. Learn early that this is a good thing. Learn early that God wants you to do this, to learn to respect and obey your parents. Very practically speaking, then, if I told the parents, practically, let your children know the rules and enforce the rules, let me apply those to you as children. Your parents are under the obligation to instruct you as to what the law of God is and what the rules are. You have a corresponding obligation. That's a big word. You have the responsibility to know the rules. You have the responsibility to not go blithely along, ignorantly along, assuming that that you know what's best. You have a responsibility to learn from your parents what they expect. So make it your goal to understand what your parents are doing, to understand what they are requiring. Make it your goal to know the rules so that you may play well, so that you may live well in the framework that God has set you. That's the first. The second is, I told the parents to enforce the rules, and the second is for you to accept the enforcing of that rule. This comes from Scripture as well. Do not despise the chastening of your parents. Do not despise the chastening of the Lord. They are doing so because of their love for you and because of the responsibility they have. As you do so, as you submit yourself to that authority, to the instruction and to the discipline that comes with it, there is a marvelous thing that takes place. go back to a basketball game that has no rules. If you think of a basketball team that knows the rules and knows their game plan well, it is a beautiful thing to see them play. The passes are crisp, the buckets are easy, and I want you as children to see that your family life can be that as well. That if you know and respect your and obey your parents and submit to their discipline, that there are blessings that flow from that. Well, I started off by giving, first of all, the fact that authority is not a dirty word, but it is a godly word, and that we are instructed to exercise that authority. And then looked at two practical things, the teaching of the rules and the enforcing of the rules. And just to make a transition to a time of observing the sacraments, I want to remind you that this is something that we do, that that God has given to us as for our benefit and for our encouragement. This is part of the training and the feeding that God has given to us. And I hope that you will approach this time of the sacrament with anticipation, that you'll approach it with the great joy of knowing that it is that it comes to us as the gift of God, and that He has given it to us for our observance throughout the age until He returns. So we do so with great anticipation for His blessing and the nurture that He gives through it. As we prepare our hearts to worship the Lord in the sacrament, let's do so with psalm as well. I'd like you to turn to Psalm 144, Selection B. Psalm 144, Selection D. The psalm praises God for His many blessings and the setting upon our hearts of a new song to sing. But it also reflects on our sons being grown sturdy as plants and our daughters being like palace cornerstones. The blessing of the Lord is reflected in the family once more. So let's sing His praise, singing Psalm 144, Selection D.